several years ago. You probably remember Pastor Darren if you've been here for a while. Remember Pastor Darren? Hard to forget Pastor Darren. Guy with all that hair and everything. And yeah, he was quite bald. Darren and I, from the very first time I interviewed him, one night I called him on the phone at my house to interview him first time. And I talked to him for 4 hours. My wife kept coming down the staircase. What are you doing? I'm still talking to that guy in Texas. So Darren and I became really good friends all the years that he was here before God led him back to live near his mother after his dad passed away. And so he's doing good. But we had a philosophy. We're going to hire somebody. We're going to fly to where they are or drive to where they are to interview them. Because you see a person in their home environment, you learn a lot of things about them. Especially if I show up, I'm looking at the turf. What's that tell me? I see a squared away turf. I know this guy is squared away. We can trust him with the church. Weed free, it's telling me a lot. But so we would fly around and go see people, take them out to dinner, get to know them, go by their house, et cetera, and we had a good time. So I told Darren before he left, we should have written a book about things that we encountered when we flew around the country, because we did it a lot, interviewing candidates. One in particular was quite interesting. We went to South Williamsport, Pennsylvania, to interview a young man for our tech position. And so we drove up there. Kevin McCarthy, remember Kevin, when he was our other worship director? Kevin and Darren and I drove up there. I'd never been to Pennsylvania like that, so rented a Suburban, took off, and I couldn't believe how hilly Pennsylvania was. I thought it was flat. I was shocked at how mountainous it was and beautiful. And I wasn't even thinking in my head as a former baseball player the significance of Williamsport. Home of Little League. It's your hometown?
I played on the original.
You have played there. Did I ask you to talk during the service? That's funny. Yeah, sorry. I'm just joking with you. You're proud of that area, I see. Yes. Was it fun to play there? Yeah. You said you played on the field?
The original field, not the big stadium complex.
Oh, what was there originally? Yeah, that must have been a lot of fun. Yeah, sweet memories, I'm sure. Yeah. Well, when I showed up there as a Californian, I had no idea what I was looking at until later that afternoon. It dawned on me where I was. And I'm like, I'm at the seat of baseball. This is my life growing up. And so I told Pastor Darren and Kevin, I said, hey, before we go interview this guy at 6 o'clock, we need to go by and see the stadium. And so we did. And so we plugged in the coordinates and drove there. It was about 5 o'clock and it was getting dark. It was in the wintertime. We parked the Suburban up in the upper parking lot, and we headed off to each of our own areas where we wanted to go, what we wanted to go see. So we just started walking around. It was great. So this is a picture, as you would know from being there. This is a picture from like home plate looking out. See those trees up there at the top, those like six of them in a row? You see those? Don't lie. Can you? Oh, it doesn't show over there. Those trees right there? Yeah. So we parked up there. And then that facility right there is like the headquarters of Little League. And so it was getting dark where we were there. I had about maybe 45 minutes to go see this young man, interview him. So I wanted to check out the field. So we're walking all around. And so I went down this hill. I didn't use the sidewalk. Well, if a man sees a sidewalk, he doesn't need that. I can hike the hill. So I went down. Going down is one thing. Coming back up is another thing. So I hiked down over here and went and kind of checked out the field. And then Kevin and Darren came back up here to the parking lot up here on this level, and you can see it's steep. I mean, it's a long ways down there, and there's two hills. And so I got past the first hill and got up to the second hill, and I decided, because I looked, because over on this side of the building, over there is a walkway. Yeah, I didn't need that to come up to the parking lot. I'll just go up the hill. And so I began to walk up the hill at an angle like you should, like on a switchback, but there was no trail. I was just making my own trail up the grassy slope. And the higher I got, the steeper it got. Did I mention it was winter? It was winter. Because it was winter, had changed the dynamics of the turf. It was not friendly turf anymore. It was frozen turf, wet turf, muddy turf. Steeper it got, the more difficult it was to take a step. And so I was almost to crest the top. I could see Darren's bald head up at the parking lot. And I'm like, I'm almost home free. I've got this. I had a backpack on, which added extra weight to me. So I'm, you know, hiking up there. And I don't know at what point in time it happened, but I lost my footing. And when I lost my footing, I lost everything. Have you ever been in a wreck? Like a wreck? I've been in several of them. Or I've fallen out of trees several times as a tree trimmer. So, and whenever I've ever been in anything like that, it's always like slow motion. Like in a wreck, whoa, you know, falling out of a tree. Same, it was like slow motion falling out of trees. And so it was kind of like that. It was like slow motion, like I'm going down, this is ugly. And so what I did when I went down, I hit on all fours, and I had my cell phone in my hand, and I slammed my cell phone into the wet turf, and I grabbed with my grip the turf. The only problem was it all came out in my hand, because I over-gripped it, and it was just muddy, came out by the roots. I tore a chunk of it out. And then, like in slow motion, I began to go down that hill on all fours, telephone, hand. I kid you not, this is not a pastoral exaggeration. I created two muddy tracks pulling out the turf all the way down that hill. I was so embarrassed. But as I'm going down the hill, I'm picking up speed because I got a pack on. When I got down, I see Darren's head receding into the distance, you know. He doesn't even see me. You know, he's just like looking out at the horizon, not realizing I'm facing death itself. And I got down to the bottom of the hill, and then gravity caused me to go airborne. So I took off like a rocket. I went through the air, and I did a complete flip with my backpack. And then I landed on my rear, facing home plate. Yeah, I was like stunned. I'm sitting there going, what in the world just happened? And, you know, I'm looking at my phone. It's covered in mud and grass is all stuck in it. My whole body is solid mud. I kid you not. There was mud everywhere. I mean everywhere. Like under my shirt. It was everywhere. Slimy mud. And I'm like, this is embarrassing. I got like 15 minutes to go interview this guy. I can't show up like this. What kind of church is this? And so I looked at my options, go back up the hill, be a man, or take the sidewalk. Sidewalk, yeah. I went up the sidewalk. I got to the parking lot. Darren saw me coming at him. He's like, whoa, what happened to you? I'm like, you didn't see that? And he started laughing at me. He's like, man, you are toast. Then I got over to the Suburban. Kevin popped out, the driver's or passenger side. He saw me. He started cracking up. And they're like, dude, you can't go to the interview looking like that. No kidding. And so I got my suitcase out of the back. I got some clothes out. And I had to change all my clothes because I was covered in slimy mud. And this is going to be spiritual in just a minute. Just hang on with me. So you're thinking, well, guys, what's this guy talking about? So I get in the car to change clothes, and we're parked by this facility where all these windows are lit up, where all the workers are working on Little League stuff in there. So we're parked. We're the only car in the parking lot, and it's night. It's dark now, and I'm trying to change clothes, and Kevin opens the door. Beep, lights come on. I'm like, dude, close the door. I'm in a little decency here. And I see all these people coming to the windows like, what's going on down there? I'm like, man, you ever done anything lame like that? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have. And I eventually got my, you know, clothes changed and everything, and everything was good. They were handing me newspapers to wipe all the mud off. You ever try to clean mud off with a newspaper? It's not optimal. And so I think the newspaper even made me worse. I mean, it was terrible. And I showed up to dinner like that. Like, I mean, Macaroni Grill's where we went. I mean, they have great restrooms for just kind of cleaning off mud. And I probably totaled that restroom when I went in there to... Now, this has a spiritual application. Did you know that? Let's think of it like this. Covered in mud like that, that was my old life before I knew Christ. Thought I was clean. I wasn't. I was spiritually dirty, filthy, jacked up, right? Then I became a Christian. Jesus forgave me on my sin and gave me new clothing. And now in his presence, I am like white robe clothing. You know what I mean? Holy. That's my position in Jesus. Practice is a whole nother thing. What's practice? Well, the whole Christian life is basically amounts to making my position, wearing beautiful, holy, white clothing, to match my practice. Make those two. So what it means is I take off old clothing, sinful clothing, and I put on new clothing every day. It's a constant battle, right? And so Paul is going to take what he just taught us in chapters 1 and 2 about who is Jesus. He's going to say, I just talked about verses 1, 2, 3, and 4, chapter 3, about if you have a heavenly mindset, then you're not going to have an earthly mindset. That, by definition, will change how you live. And so if you truly have that, then you need to take off old clothing and put on new clothing. Because as a Christian, you have an option. Before I was a Christian, I didn't know I had on sinfully stained clothing. Once I became a Christian, I realized I did. But now I have the will by the power of the Spirit to not wear that clothing anymore. Could you imagine after the interview, if I would have told Darren and Kevin, hey, I want to put all that clothing back on. You should have seen it. They would have laughed me out of the Suburban. Serious? But that's what it's like as a Christian, is like, you sometimes put on the old clothing, don't you? Right? And so if you thought this morning was going to be a positive message, it's a negative message. So if you came to be encouraged, that's not my goal today. I'm following Paul. What's Paul say? Well, if you truly believe in who Jesus is and you have a heavenly mindset, not an earthly mindset, it should affect your clothing, spiritual clothing. Well, like what clothing? That's what he's going to talk about. He's going to talk about clothing that needs to go. Okay? So you need to ask yourself a question as we move through this. What clothing am I wearing, spiritually speaking, that needs to go? Or got any clothing that needs to go? Because I'm sure that nobody in our church is 100% holy. Are you? In your practical walk. Because you have moments where, well, I got on the wrong clothing. And I need to take this off, confess that, and put on something else. So in this passage, beginning in verse 5, till the end of the book, here's the motif Paul's going to develop. It's pretty simple. He's going to say, your Christian life should always be moving, always, from the old life, old clothing, to the new life, new clothing. That I have the power to do that now, to live a victorious life, but it's my choice to submit and yield to the Spirit or not. He's going to develop this in two ways. Number one, he's going to tell you, there needs to be an identification of the wrong clothing. I need to know what it is, as a Christian, I should not be wearing. So in verse 5, he tells you what it is. He says, therefore, consider the members of your earthly body as dead to, he's going to list 5 things, immorality, impurity, passion, evil desire, greed, which amounts to idolatry. He just listed 5 pieces of clothing that need to be put off to the side. In fact, he says they need to die. Now, it doesn't look so much like in the English text that this is an imperative, like a command, but it is. So in the Greek text, which I think we have a picture of the Greek text. So in the Greek text, see this first word here, nekrosate, un. Nekrosate is the command, put to death these things. That's what it says in the Greek text. And the second word is un. Un is therefore. So un is like the conclusion of an argument. So the argument was, have a heavenly mindset, not an earthly mindset, verses 1-4. In light of that, it should change your behavior. Well, like how so? You should take off that old sinful clothing and put on sinless clothing. Well, what exactly? So he gives us a command. It's necrosis is the word. Necrosis means death. It's a medical term. And if you type in necrology and necrosis, you'll find it all over the place. It talks about that death comes to tissue that doesn't get enough blood flow. It might have some kind of disease, cancer, etc. Necrosis sets in and it's a death. He says, when you look at your old sinful clothing from your non-Christian life, you don't want that on anymore. So do what you can to kill it by the Spirit's power in your life. And he put it into a command form because he knows us. Because had he said, hey, you might want to think about sometime in your lifetime, if he couched it like that, then we, who understand Spanish, would have a mañana attitude. What's mañana? I grew up on the border. All my friends were Hispanic. I get mañana. If I tell somebody something where I grew up and they said, hey, mañana, Martin, ¿qué pasó? I knew it wasn't happening because it's mañana. What's mañana mean? Later. I'll get to that later. And so Paul says, no, I'm not into mañana. I'm into today. What needs to happen? Necrosis. Put to death the things I'm going to list. And just for those who are going to Dallas Seminary, which we're their East Coast campus here, we have 200 students here at the church, and the school's in our basement with 20,000 volumes of theological books, which are excellent. It's awesome. We need to classify this aorist tense imperative here, and I will classify it personally as an aggressive aorist. You might be thinking, what is this guy talking about? Well, are you wondering what I'm talking about? That's okay. Because an aorist imperative, that's an ingressive, not aggressive, ingressive, means you need to start doing this because some of them weren't doing it. So he says, you need to start taking off this clothing. and putting on better clothing. Romans 6, Paul talks the same way to the Roman church, verse 13. It says, do not go on as a Christian doing what? It's in English. You see it? Presenting the members of your body, your physical body, to sin as instruments of unrighteousness. As a Christian, don't do that anymore. But notice the adverse, the contrast. But present yourselves as a Christian to God as those alive from the dead, and your members, your body, speaking about your physical body, present your body as instruments of righteousness. So this is similar to, don't put on the old dirty clothing anymore. Put on new clothing that honors God. That's a daily responsibility. So he's going to list for our benefit five pieces of clothing that I got to go. And what you have got to ask yourself, am I wearing any of these as a Christian? Because if you leave here today wondering, what was Marty talking about today? You should know, well, I've got on piece of clothing number two, and that one's got to go. Or I've got on two, three, and four. It's really got to go. So what are they? He's going to list five of them. Sinful clothing number one. You ready? That was my introduction. You still with me? Sinful clothing number one, he says, is, what is it? Immorality. Immorality. I will give you the Greek word, and you'll totally know what this word is. The Greek word in the text is porneion. What does that sound like?
Pornography.
Pornography or porno. That is exactly right. That is the word that he uses there. He says, put to death in your body, porneia. Well, what is porneia? Well, porneia, sexual sin. Okay, well, I got to have more information. What does sexual sin mean? Well, not what it means right now. It's more importantly, what did it mean then? So to understand what a word meant then, you have to read Gerhard Kittel. It's a German dictionary, and it's multi-volumes. I have a set in my office. If you want to understand, how was this word used in classical Greek? How was this word used in Koine Greek? Koine, K-O-I-N-E. That's the Greek that Paul used. How was it used in that culture? Well, I read the article, and it's a long article, and I will summarize it for you this way. Porneia, that Paul speaks about here, immorality, how it's translated in the English text, refers to all kinds of sexual deviancy between people outside of marriage, who are not married, and all kinds of sexual deviancy of those who are in marriage. So it covers everything from homosexuality to adultery. And everything in between. So anything God says that is verboten, forbidden, and you do that, and you rationalize behavior to do it, or you redefine terms to do it, Paul says doesn't change the fact that that's sin. So what our culture has done is they've taken the whole concept of immorality and turned it on its head. And so now it's very difficult to know what is sexually pervert, because everything is permissible. Why? Hey, man, all love is love. Really? Well, if all love is by definition love, and that's how you prove what it is, then by definition, nothing could be perverted, correct? Because it's all what you think it is. But Paul says, not so. That porneia covers everything outside of marriage and inside of marriage that God says you should not be doing. And so when he says, put this to death, he's going to be very explicit. So he says, live as if porneia is dead to your body. Let's drill down into this. Specifically, so you know exactly what I'm talking about. If you are a Christian and you are engaged in pornography, Paul says, you need to put that to death. If you're a young man, if you're an old man, if you're a young woman, or you're an old woman, and you're fiddling around with this online or whatever it is you're doing, you need to deal with this. Well, then how do I deal with that? Confession? It's sin. I confess that to God and tell him, you got to cleanse me from this. You need to go to other Christians that you can trust and tell them what you're dealing with, what you're struggling with, because chances are they've struggled with it too and got victory. So you need strong stakes in your life when the wind blows and temptation comes your way. You can go to them because they're praying for you. Bring it out into the open. Sin loves to stay in the darkness. Why? It can hide. Last thing it wants is for you to go tell somebody. And so tell somebody. And if you've put put a filter on your phone or on your computer, and don't put it on your computer, and then you have the password. I mean, I know how sinners think. No, you have someone put that on your computer, and they have the password, so you cannot go to places you shouldn't go to. But if you're dealing with that, you need to come free. Live as if it's dead unto you. When I went through school, things are worse today. This stuff was everywhere when I played sports. In the locker room, It was everywhere in guys' lockers. It was, you couldn't get away from it. And I knew how powerful that was as a temptation. And so I always steered clear of it. But I know some people have bit the dust on that one. It's sad because it controls your whole life. So Paul says, put this to death. The Spirit of God can help you be victorious. And he can. Another illustration. If you are a Christian who's having an affair, because it happens, from what I have studied, 12.4% of people that go to church have affairs as Christians. In a church of 3,000, you do the math, 12.4%. I don't have a phone with a calculator. Anybody have a phone with a calculator? No one has a phone here in this church? Someone can help a brother? Can you crunch the numbers for me? 360? Okay, so in a church of 3,000, 12.4%, we have heard it right here from the front row. 360 people are either having an affair or they're thinking about having an affair. Because I just heard yesterday from somebody talking about an affair, and the person said, well, this woman who's not my wife makes me feel so alive. Well, I don't know how, I care how she makes you feel. That's sin. That's not your wife. So you need to get away from her. Cut off that relationship and get back with your wife. Maybe you need to go to some Christian counseling or something, but you need help because that is sinful behavior. So if that is you, then you need to make a move because Paul says, put it to death. Don't rationalize it. Don't think it's that no big deal. Deal something with it. Say you're a young person. Say you're 18. You got a girlfriend, but you're doing stuff with her that you're ashamed of what you're doing with her. What should you do? Same thing. Confess it to God. Seek counseling, seek other Christian brothers and sisters in Christ to pray with you, hold you accountable. I mean, and if it's with your girlfriend, don't get alone. The temptation is too great. Do stuff with couples. I mean, there's other ways to function. If you're married, and Paul says, put to death porneia, immorality, then it's not okay to flirt, right? I had a guy tell me one time who was married, as we're walking around an amusement park the whole day, he's married. He's constantly telling me as a new Christian, hey, check out this chick. Look at this one over here. Wow. I'm like, after the end of the day, I said, you got to stop doing that, man. He goes, I'm just looking at the menu. I go, but you're married. And we're not amusement park. We're at Disneyland. He goes, well, I'm just looking at the menu. I go, you've been tasting the menu all day. This is sin. This is sin. What did Jesus say? Matthew 5. If a man looks upon a woman with lust in his heart, you have ipso facto committed adultery. So God tends to tighten what we loosen. And I confronted him, I don't know, around Dumbo or somewhere where we were at, you know, told him, hello, you're kind of like the elephants over here. You need to get your act together. So is this what you're struggling with? Many struggle with it, and God can give you victory. It's old clothing. You don't want to wear it. Two, sinful clothing. Number two, impurity. Well, A catharsion is the word. Cathartic is our word. So if something is cathartic, it is positive or negative? Positive. Like, it's positive. So like, you know, you haven't had that, you know, you're having a tough day, really tense, uptight, a lot of stuff going on in your life. You pull in, favorite coffee shop, you get your favorite drink, you sit down, you drink it, and it's just like your world comes to center. You know what I'm talking about? It's like, oh. You know what I'm talking about? It's like cathartic, isn't it? It's like, or maybe it's something that you eat, a sleeve of Girl Scout cookies or something, and boom. The mint ones are so excellent. You eat one, you ate 10. You're like, I'm going for the second row. You know what I'm saying? But you eat it, and you're just like, oh, man, this feels so good. Yeah, it's cathartic. Okay, so that word's, well, then why did Paul says it's translated as impure? Because if you take the word cathartic, which is the Greek word, and you put an alpha, the first letter in the Greek alphabet, if you put an alpha in front of any word, it negates the meaning. So what'd Paul do? He put an alpha in front of the cathartic word, which means it's not pure, it's impure. And so he says, if you got anything in your life that's going on that's impure, you need to get rid of that. Now, what's interesting is 9 out of the 10 uses in the New Testament come from Paul, and he frequently weds it with porneia. What's that telling me? That Paul thinks porneia and this word for catharsis go together. Why? Because if you choose sinful activity sexually, it leads to you being morally and spiritually impure by definition, regardless of what it is that you're doing. Based on the lexical meaning, which how Paul uses it, A couple of things to think about, how to apply this word for impurity. Years ago, many years ago, when I was a new pastor, a wife came into my office and told me, you know, my husband is out of control. He's such an angry man. He exploded all over me the other day, and you need to talk to him. And I know this at this point in my pastoral career, there's always two sides to every story. So I said, okay, I'll talk to him. So I talked to him, had him come in my office. Big dude. He was a tight end for University of Nevada. Big guy. He sat down, and I was like, what's up? Because I always thought he was a mild-mannered guy, not an angry, explosive guy. And he said, well, he said, I came home the other day. I work all day. I own a liquor store. And I came home. I never get the mail. And I got the mail. And as I'm walking in the house, I'm going through the letters. And there's a whole bunch of letters there from Visa. He said, I don't even have a Visa card. He said, we're a new couple with a baby, little baby. And he said, I don't like Visa. And he said, I got all these Visa cards. I think they're offers. But he said, I opened them up. And each one of them is, you owe 10 grand, you owe 8 grand, you owe 13 grand. He said, last time I counted, I think I owed over $40,000 on Visa cards. He's like, what in the world? And they're in my name. So he said, I walked inside the house. Okay, now if you're a man and your wife's at home, what are you going to do? You can probably ask the question, right? Like, hey, honey, do you know anything about this 40 grand on Visa cards? So he said, I did. And he said, my wife told me, well, I know we don't have a lot of money and I like to shop. And so I opened these cards in your name. So I could go shopping. And he said, Pastor, at that point, it's when I exploded. I'm thinking to myself, I know why you're mad, because I would have been mad. What husband sitting here would have went, hey, no problem, babe, 40 grand, not a problem. How many men would go, we need to have a talk here? Yeah, so I'm like, okay, unbelievable. It destroyed their marriage, by the way, her shopping habits. And charging things up, because what was going on was what Paul would say is, it's impure how you're living. I had another young lady come to me one time years ago, and she told me, "Hey, I got a couple kids, and my husband has come to me and told me early on in our relationship that I need to have other women in addition to me to feel fulfilled." How do you feel about that as a pastor? My job's pretty simple. What would you have told her? No, for him to have other women in addition to you, this is sin. This is adultery. How many women has he had? Well, seven that I know of. Seven. And I said, do you know that the scriptures allow you to divorce him because he's committed adultery? Not that God wants you to. That's not the highest road. But you can get permission from the Lord to do it if you wanted to. But higher road would be to forgive and to move on. She was shocked that she had an option. And I'm like, you have got to be kidding me. What was his problem? Impure living. What did Paul say? As a Christian, you need to put this off. You got any of that in your life? Impure? Anything that's impure? That's got to go. Clothing number three, passion. The word here that he uses is the word pathos. Sound familiar? It's our word, pathos. Pathos is a positive word in English. You can see it here highlighted. Pathos in the yellow. In our terminology, it's a positive term to have passion for something. So if you have passion as an athlete playing lacrosse or whatever it is that you play, this is a good thing, because you don't want somebody who has no passion. You want somebody who's like, well, they're going to go after it. They got a ton of passion. And so that's the way we tend to look at the word, but that's not how Paul is using it, because the first two words were related to sexuality and have a negative connotation. This one is the same thing. Pathos in a negative way. I'll show you what I mean. In Romans chapter 1, verse 26. So if you want to know how a word is used, what it means, you look at how the author uses that word. So to understand what Paul means by pathos, I don't read Peter. I don't read John. I read Paul. So the question is, how does Paul use that in his writings? Well, he uses it in Romans 1, 26. Pathos. To talk about the passion that a woman has for another woman who's traded a man's bodily function for a woman. And Paul says, this type of passion is sin. That's what he says. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verse 5. He talks about it in that passage to talk about unchecked sexual desire. You need to put this away. And he's talking about people committing sexual sin like adultery. That's sin too. And so he says, you need to take this passion that you have that's sinful and take that clothing off and drop it at the feet of Christ and put on clothing that honors Christ. So is passion of a neurotic nature that's wrong getting the best of you? Paul says, time to take that clothing. That's got to go. It's got to go. You got to ask the Lord for deliverance and strength. Clothing number four, evil desire. Evil desire. Epithumia is the word. Epithumia in Greek refers to desire. So the word by definition is not bad. To have desire for something, that's not inherently bad. You want to take a test to move up in your positions at your job, get better pay for your family. Great desire. The only problem is he takes that word epithumia and he weds it to the word kakon, which is bad. So he says, let me qualify desire. It's bad desire. It's evil desire. Now, I did a little study this week because I'm studying the etymology of these words. The word epithumias is also related to a Greek word, epithumetos, epithumetos. These words are very similar. And I find this, when I read this in this, sometimes reading a Greek lexicon is very exciting and interesting. This is a case in point. Sometimes it's very boring. This is very interesting because it says this word for desire denotes, and I'll read it to you what it says. It says, it denotes the cravings of a pregnant woman. That's what it says. And I started laughing at my desk when I read it. I'm serious. Because I'm automatically thinking to myself, what I've heard women say they ate when they were pregnant. Now, don't get all quiet on me. Okay, it's confession time. Last service, the ladies were just telling me weird stuff they ate. Stuff they desired that maybe your husband's going, babe, that's going to kill you. You know, what weird things did you eat when you were pregnant? I can tell you what they said in the last service, but that's confidential. Anybody, like, you're pregnant and you had a craving for, like, something totally bizarre? And you're like, serious? Anybody? Egg rolls and ice cream. Who said this? Yes, it's dark. I can't hardly see where you are. Egg rolls and ice. I wouldn't do it, but what? 7-Eleven slushies from God. Okay, yes. Yes. Yeah, you have a sister over here. Anybody over here?
Fish.
Lots of fish. Okay, not too dangerous. But
ice cream.
Yeah, more ice cream. Excellent. Okay. Pickles. No one did pickles with peanut butter or sour cream or pickle juice. Yeah, one lady last service, not to disclose who she is, but she was drinking the olive juice out of the can type thing. I'm like, serious? Like, that just doesn't sound tasty to me, but yeah. So when you get pregnant, your body's craving strange things, right? You have a good desire for kind of things that are off the hook, but they're not deadly. Paul says, I'm not talking about that, but it's that strong desire for something. And he says it's like a sexual thing, epithumia, this particular word. It depends on what the object of your desire is. That makes it sinful. So if God forbids the object of my desire, then for me to pursue it, even if I try to rationalize it, redefining terms, in God's eyes, if the object is wrong and he said it's wrong, it's always wrong. Think about the things that people desire. Parimutuel betting. Yesterday was a big race, right? It's the shortest sporting event in U.S. history, right? How long does it take the horses to run around the track? 2 minutes. Who won the race? A horse. Thank you. Yeah. I should have interviewed this church before I came here. It's like, yeah, that's pretty funny. Yeah. The horse that was in last place won? Golden something. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But people wager tons of money on this thing. They desire this. People desire to be drunks, to drink beyond measure. They gamble beyond measure. I mean, there's a whole sort of things that we get involved with that you desire these things to the point of it's evil and destructive. And so Paul says, if you got anything in your life that is an evil desire that's destroying you, you need to take that clothing off today and put it off to the side and put this clothing on that's a good desire. Last one he says, this one's convicting. It's a monosyllabic word. We all know this word well. What is it? Greed. Greed. Put aside greed. Now, in Greek, it's multisyllables. Pleonaxia is the word. It's a combination of two words, more and to have, or translated, to have more. What is greed? Well, more than I possibly need, and I just need a little bit more. When COVID hit, I went to the Walmart here on Brick Center Parkway one night. It was about 9 o'clock. There wasn't very many people in the store at that time. And I walked in with my basket, and I was going to get one of those bottles of hand sanitizer because, you know, they said this might be good for COVID. And nobody really knew what COVID was at the time. I just knew that it was happening. So I might go get a bottle. And they had those big, I don't know, big bottles, like 16 ounces. They don't even sell them anymore. It was $2.99. So I pulled in. There's a giant bin of those things. And I'm like, oh, I can score. And I mean, and there was a guy standing there with a basket who emptied the entire bin into his basket. I didn't get one bottle. And I don't want to start a fight in Walmart. Like, dude, hey, give me one. I said, hey, whatever, man. You got problems. You need to go to church. You know? He took all the bottles. And I'm thinking to myself, as COVID hit and you can't find the hand sanitizer, I'm like, this guy probably is sipping lattes in Tahiti who sold these things for no telling how much. But what was his real problem? Greed. Greed. You have a problem with greed? Getting more than you possibly need? I'll give you another illustration to help prime the pump. Years ago, in my last church, a trucker came to me, and he said, hey, Pastor Marty, I got a whole truck, you know, 60-foot trailer full of almost brand new Hallmark display cases. They all have lighting in them. They're electrically charged and everything. They're awesome. But Hallmark doesn't want them anymore. They want me to, like, give them away or throw them away. He said, they're too great to throw away. So could a pastor use these? I'm like, serious? These are great for display cases, for new members packets, and all kinds of stuff. And so I looked at them. I liked them. And there's a truck full of them, like 25, 30 of them. And so I said, well, I don't need that many. I mean, maybe one, but I have a pastor's conference tomorrow I'm going to. I'll tell all the pastors at the conference. So I go to San Francisco, go to the pastor's conference. After the conference is over, I got up from my seat and said, hey, brothers, I can hook you up with some great marketing display cases for your church. They're free. Here's the guy's number. You know, call him up and he'll hook you up and enjoy. And so a couple weeks later, I talked to the trucker. And I said, hey, I mentioned it at the pastor's conference, you know, for the other pastors to come by and get some things. You know, what happened? He goes, well, one guy immediately called me and said he'd like to come by and check out my merchandise. And so he did. And he was driving a large U-Haul. I said, well, how many did he take? What do you think he did? He took all of them. That guy needs to go to church. The pastor took all of the display cases and he's in a little tiny church start. And I'm like, you didn't need all of those. He's probably selling them. I'm like, serious? And so, you know, what was the brother's problem? Greed. So if you look at that and go, hey, I didn't know greed in my life. Try to get through a day and not want something else. Paul says, take off that clothing and put on better clothing that honors God. And then in case you need some motivation, because sometimes we knew, he gives you some motivation. Identification, motivation. What's the motivation? Last verse, verse 6. He says, for it is because of these things that he just mentioned, these things that what? Wrath of God will come upon the sons of disobedience. And in them you once also walked when you were living in them. You used to live with that clothing on all the time. Now you're working at getting that clothing off, but some of you are drifting back into wearing that clothing. Don't put it on. Why? The same God that will use his justice to judge everybody that's a non-believer on judgment day, his justice will be perfect because it will be related to your sinful activity. The same God that will judge them will also discipline you. God won't look at you putting on that old clothing and say, no big deal. I know you're having a weak moment. No, God is not like that. He said, God will discipline you. This sounds a lot like Hebrews 12. Hebrews 12, verse 6 says, for those whom the Lord, what? Loves. What does he do? He disciplines. So you have children?
Yes.
No one wants to confess they do? You have children? One person.
Yeah, I have kids.
Yeah. So when they go off the rails, off the reservation, put on the old clothing, do you sit there as a dad and go, hey, no big deal, son, I've done that before? No, what do? You become Moses. You try to help them see the light. You might even have to discipline them somehow because you love them enough to tell them no, right? So he says, God does that with you. He scourges every son whom he receives. It is for discipline that you endure. God deals with you as sons. For what son is there whom his father does not discipline? My dad disciplined us. Remember my mother? My dear old little mother, she was tough at home, at her prime. I mean, when I went off of the reservation, I had to meet with my mom. And then I knew my dad was coming home. And he came home with a gun belt and a pistol and the whole thing. And the first thing she would tell him at the door was, I need to talk to you about Marty. I knew I was about to meet Jesus at that point. Because he was going to help me not put this sinful clothing on anymore and to put on godly clothing. And God's going to do the same thing with us. So don't keep God busy is the thing. Get off the clothing. So my simple question to you is, got any garments that need to go? Today's the day to say, God, I lay them at your feet. Now give me the strength not to put them on again. And he will. Now, if you're not a Christian, you're just wearing those godless garments all the time, but you don't need to. He wants to give you holy garments, and that comes at the moment of faith. We're going to sing a beautiful song today. More like you're going to sit and listen to this song this morning. It's a Chris Tomlin song. It's a great song. I like the first hymn. It's beautiful, but it will help put the whole sermon in perspective. God bless you, and may he give you victory.